This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Futurology. Guys, it's absolutely fantastic to be on air again. My name is Brett Sinclair, or more commonly known as Squirrel Rocker. And with me today, we have a full house. Brett, welcome to the show, bud.
Thanks. Welcome to you.
I'm really excited that you're a little bit off your high from last week at MediaTek. Wasn't that a great show?
It was awesome. So good. I went every day that really? It was open. Yeah. First day, second day, third day.
That's impressive. And yeah, Mike, how are you, bud?
I'm very well. Thank you, Brett. Very well. Happy to be here. And nice to have the full team again. Very good.
It's great to have
I got to be honest. I have to say, Brett really was like a kid in a candy store last week. It really was fun.
Candy store or what other store?
Well, let's just move on because I don't want to go into the pawn shop now.
It was tech porn. It was amazing.
It was tech porn.
Yeah, it was great.
Especially the VR section. I did notice you hang around there a hell of a lot.
No, that was good. The cameras were pretty fun. There's some really expensive cameras. It was, and that everybody bought the toys out.
Did they have a great zoom, though?
Yes. I only go for the big lenses.
Of course. That's what we figured.
Yeah. Size counts.
Size counts. And diameter. It's right how big it is at the end.
Yeah. Right, like that rock over there.
That's beautiful.
You're right there, Brett.
Yeah, I'm dying.
I'm embarrassing you maybe a little bit.
I'm a little bit, yeah. I've actually gone red slightly because wife usually uses a microscope.
Well, let's get back to the toilet seat now, shall we?
Yeah, let's get back to the toilet seat. So anyway, I mean, we've got a great topic today, right? Internet of Things. I must admit, there's a whole lot of big, major trends kind of rolling through at the moment, whether it's cloud computing, the ubiquitousness of connected devices outside of just mobile handsets. Mm. I'm really loving this whole artificial intelligence vibe. We've covered that quite a bit with big data. And when you pull it all together, we're into this world of Internet of Things, right?
Excellent, yeah.
So
I heard another saying of that. Instead of an Internet of Things, it's the Thing-to-Net.
Wow.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
The Thing-to-Net.
No, the Thing-to-Net. Thing-to-Net.
On that note, the world of Internet of Things, we've got an absolute expert in the studio today. I mean, he's a really good mate of ours. Jamie Whittaker, he's recently joined Barlow's Equipment as the Global Chief Digital Officer.
Brett, you used to work for that company, like both of us. It's Barlow World.
Barlow World.
It's Barlow's.
Yeah, Barlow's.
Jamie, it used to be called Barlow's when
you were
there. Yeah.
We're talking many years back, right?
Many years back.
So, hello, Jamie.
Did Punch still work there at that point?
Yeah.
So, welcome, Jamie. Great to have you on the show,
Thanks, guys. Yeah. It's nice to be here.
You get the beard award today.
Thank you. I get the beard
award.
Yes,
it is magnificent.
It is magnificent.
It is.
I think we need to tweet it.
I think you're in danger of being on Brett Sinclair's man crush wall.
Yeah, no, well, he's been there for a while.
Oh, really?
I'm already there.
Really? Prime spot number one.
Yeah. Anyone who has a beard like that and has worked at Discovery, because that seems to be a trend, right? Okay. My man wall stuff is all a Discovery.
Oh, really?
Is it a Discovery or a Discovery?
Well, at least you already have your running shoes, so when you need to run away, you're safe.
Correct. Because I got running shoes I can run after you, bud.
I'm wearing the wrong ones.
Yeah, oops.
So we all kind of know what the Internet of Things is about.
Mm, yes.
But before we start talking about exactly what it is, what are some of the craziest things you've heard about other people's idea of what the Internet of Things is?
Well, if I talk to my kids, I mean, they're quite jacked up. They think Internet of Things is everything that can be touched and everything without a wire.
Ah.
Now, that's quite interesting, right?
It's a very different perspective on it, yes.
I don't think I've had odd descriptions or definitions of what IoT is. People either know what it is or have no idea what it is. They use it every day, but they can't define it. They don't actually know it's there.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I haven't heard any crazy descriptions, but I think probably the best description I've heard is it's like a nervous system.
Okay. That's one way of doing it.
Why? Is the system nervous?
Well, it's just the way we're going. Yeah. Very nervous.
No, but I've had a couple of interactions.
The little sensors are going to be running out of the room any minute. And the little microphones following after them. The AI saying, Brett Sinclair's lost the plot. Squirrel rocking out of here.
Squirrel rocking.
Sorry, Brett.
It's ubiquitousness, right? I think the word is ubiquity.
Oh, ubiquity.
Yes.
Did I just make a word up there?
Ubiquitousness.
Okay,
the ubiquitousness.
Hashtag what Brett Sinclair says at last.
There you go. Yes.
I finally get a hashtag for me.
That's quite a long, quite a long hashtag, ubiquitousness.
Yes, yes. And, there's no correct.
No. Yeah, it's not going to go viral.
You're arrogant. Damn it.
And there's no correct spelling to it either.
Yeah.
Quite ironic, though, that the word ubiquitousness is not going to be everywhere. just while we're on that note, you know why they call it the selfie, hey?
Because you're by yourself?
No, because narcissicity was too difficult to spell. No, but so in some of the interactions I've had, I mean, you bring up Internet of Things or the ThinkNet, and like you kind of get this like quizzical look and the sideways head movement, and everybody's like, okay, what is that? And without realizing it, we're actually surrounded by a lot of Internet of Things. Absolutely. And I think one of the key sort of blossoming areas of business at the moment is the effective use of Internet of Things, all these connected devices, all these sensors that are all providing massive data that, when interpreted well, provide really in-depth and huge insight.
That's the key part to it, is the interpretation of that data and creating value from it. And I think a lot of the time that goes missing. I think, you know, you mentioned, Brett, that it's this thing that's around us all the time. The most interesting thing to me when I was, you know, when we were first getting into IoT and understanding it, was that it predates the first website. The first connected IoT device, 1989, 1990, was predated the first publicly available website. So it's been around forever, and it is everywhere, and people just don't know it.
Yeah, well, it's just because us digital people are trying to steal it.
No, I think it's
trying to own it.
Own it, yeah.
Well, it's probably got the opportunity to scale now for the first time. You know, suddenly everything's actually working. Data's becoming a manageable framework, you know, with the power of cloud, et cetera. Yeah. It's changed. It's matured into the right time.
There's a whole bunch of things which have enabled, you know, why it's made it the right time. Like you say, connectivity is the IP-based networking, it's computing power, it's miniaturization of stuff. I mean, you couldn't have a wearable device. You couldn't have a wearable device if it was as big as your laptop, right? It's just it wouldn't catch on.
No, so I do see some people around work who literally look like they have a wearable device as they carry their laptop around.
Well, my favorite is the guys that walk around with their iPad taking selfies.
Narcissists with the ubiquitousness of a laptop.
So, really, I mean, what's really important about it is, even though we've got the devices, I think what we've got to do a little bit more looking into is really the networks. So, I mean, our lives have been dominated in the data space when it comes to Wi-Fi, and I think also this kind of drive into LTE, making data ubiquitous and ubiquitousness. Just kidding. I think that's really important to kind of open up a bit, because you see the operators are spending a lot of time getting the data right, getting the pricing models right, trying to understand how they're going to connect a further, 70 billion devices into their world?
Yeah.
I mean, there's some serious challenges there, right?
Yeah.
Can I ask you, before you jump into that, just to step up a bit, and let's just understand what IoT actually means, and then let's use the networks as an example of what they're trying to do.
Okay.
Because Jamie, I don't know if you want to just give us an understanding of what IoT actually is.
Okay.
In a clear understanding.
Sure. I'll give you two definitions. The first being like the strict definition, where IoT is a network of any device with an on and off switch, which is communicating with each other.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. So it's devices speaking to devices that are connected. I think a clear English version of that is a combination of things that are around, machines, whether they're a vending machine, a coffee machine, your health device that you're wearing, your phone, your computer. The gathering of the data from those connected machines, and then the applications that run on them to gather that data and give insight to the data and feed it back to those machines. That's really...
That feedback's really important, right? Because traditionally we always sense, but we're starting to now provide action based on that sense.
I think that's where the maturity of the IoT space is coming in, where you're not just gathering information anymore. You're gathering information and then providing services back to different devices and potentially to the same device, but you're providing value-added services back.
Yeah, which makes the networks prime for this.
And then you can see, because in their space, they're going, well, what's really important to us is that we own the services and revenues running over our networks.
I think that's where the challenge comes in for the network operators. So a couple of points there. The first one on how the network operators are gearing themselves up with the data and the pricing models. I assume there you're referring to international MNOs, not local. because our data is just ridiculously expensive.
It's still ridiculously priced, right, in comparison.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that there's a risk there to our consumers that they don't often realize that they are connected and are consuming data at a higher rate, and then they are they're out of pocket or they're out of data and they can no longer use it for the services that they want.
Is all of this slowing us down? This the cost, the high cost of data, is it slowing down the innovation that could possibly be happening in South Africa, or do you think that we're flourishing quite well?
I don't think any of the challenges in South Africa on the South African market slow us down. I think they make us smarter. And I think that the challenges, and that's not just in South Africa, that's across Africa. It's across
bob
any.
And weave.
It's wherever there is limited connectivity or limited network, limited skills. I think it makes the people that are working in the space strive harder and try harder to sort of solve those problems. So I don't think it is a. I don't think it's slowing us down.
Can I throw another word out there? Is it not affecting our exponentialism?
Jeez, t-shirts, hashtags.
Yeah. I'm trying to make up words as I go.
What? Exponentialism.
Our ability to scale.
Correct, right? So I agree with you. It's always causing us to advance.
Exactly. Then it's the problem. It's the cutting edge which isn't being slowed down. It's the adoption rates that potentially are.
Yeah.
Ah, that's a good point. That's so we're innovating really, really well, but the scaling of it is just
So coming back to the networks, what they're really doing is they're just shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, what they don't realize is that their foot's in their mouth while they do it.
Yeah, exactly. Because, they're shockers. I mean, it's actually disgusting as networks. You know, they're so critical to the growth of this country in terms of what they do. And they should all be lined up and shot, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to this. No, seriously.
So the problem is they've all learned from the biggest original network, right, that strangled the South African growth back in the 1990s and early 2000s.
Those red guys.
Telkom.
Oh, yes.
Telkom.
They, strangled business by, pushing the rates up for connectivity. Sure, am I allowed to say names of places?
Yeah. Sure. I mean, they know that you're Jamie Whittaker, and they'll come after you. It's fine.
I have no Telkom services. I have no Telkom services, fortunately. And I, for a long time, I refused to. I did have, in the past, I did have some, but I refused to, but I felt...
You felt raped.
I felt sick to the stomach that they were able to stranglehold the development of the economy by limiting the connectivity and pushing the prices right up.
Yeah.
I have another comment to make. Brett, you mentioned a little bit earlier about they own the pipes, but they also own the services that run across them. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that they have. I think a lot of them still think that their future growth is in the pipe. The pipe is going to become water. The money in the differentiator is not there. It's what runs across those pipes that's the real differentiator where the real value lies.
Absolutely.
But I'm going to actually challenge you on that because I think the operators also believe that, right? That's why they focus so much on the VAS services. But I'm wondering if they spent more time on the pipe and getting the scale of the pipe ready, because if you think about the types of services they could offer, it's going to be a digital play, right? They're playing outside of their core competencies. I mean, MTN, great example, right?
Of
a great example of doing that. I mean, they're buying heavily into the e-commerce space. Ooh. They're getting involved with Rocket Internet. I mean, they're doing some really cool stuff. I'm not challenging them.
Well, they were the first MNO to stop putting fiber in the ground.
Correct.
Weren't they? Do I sound corrected?
I don't know if they were first.
They were one of them. They've started doing it, which is great. And to that point, you mentioned Telkom earlier. Has it changed? Have they changed in their behavior? I mean, they've got this whole – they started the Do Mobile revolution. They started the – you know, the Bolt and all that other stuff. I mean, do they realize the error of their ways, do you think?
No. But what are those – I mean, what are those things that they've done? They've started the Bolt and they've done the Do Mobile piece. It's just – it's the same service. It's the same service, just
– in a different
implemented, implemented slightly differently. Correct. There's nothing new and but they're still
– surely the value you get from a telecom is when they start going, oh, well, we need to put fiber down. As a consumer, we see that and we go, well, great. And I look at a mobile operator and I go, well – bring down the cost of my data and give me faster data. In fact, you can bring down my cheaper data, and I'm happy to pay for faster data. But I really am not interested in buying your video services.
But you're going back again there to the non-differentiating space. You're talking about the plumbing. You're talking about the lines in the ground or the network across
But surely they are the plumbing.
They are, but they're not going to differentiate there. That'll become a price war. It'll come down to a point where it's no longer financially viable for them to put cable in the ground because they can't afford to maintain it. They need to step up and understand how can they add value to consumers outside of the space of just the connectivity.
And can I bring in Internet of Things there? Maybe that's the value point, right?
So, not a fully thought out thought, but point
it's
of discussion.
It's a philosophy, though.
No, it's a philosophy. So, I probably won't have a question. So, just roll with me on this one. But fiber is increasing property prices by up to 20%. So, as soon as you've got fiber on your property,
boom,
your property is potentially worth 20% more than it was without fiber.
Okay.
Okay. So
I'm looking for a real estate agent to build my house.
Yeah, me too, right now. Yeah, anyone?
So if that's the case, now that's brought about by market sentiment, driven by consumers and people buying these properties. Now, if that's the case, and every house is going to be incentivized to become connected, the pipe will be in homes. What the consumers then start to do surely determines the type of services that are used in this pipe.
Quite right.
Not the service providers
dictating.
You know what I mean? It's not the tail wagging the dog. The dog is actually the consumer base.
Sure. No, I agree. I think...
Are you calling consumers dogs?
Yeah. Exactly.
Sorry, I had to get that in.
And the pipe is the tail.
Okay.
Let's flip it on its head that way. I mean, let's think about if demand is coming from consumers and they're driving innovation because of their needs, how then are data infrastructures and MNOs meeting those needs? Rather than just trying to say, if we build it, they will come.
That speaks back to the to the creating, the scale. So as soon as the operators, whether they're traditional or mobile, as soon as they start putting down the capacity and the capability for people to use what they want in their home and online and connectivity wise, that creates more growth in that space, and it creates more the ubiquity of the connected devices. People become more familiar that I can connect my light bulbs in my front door and my security system and the camera, and I don't need DSTV anymore, I can just use Netflix, et cetera, et cetera. All of these different services that are now available to me that become more commonplace.
I'm glad you brought up services like Netflix, because it's month-to-month subscription-based. If you don't want it, you can turn it off. But there's a lot of month-to-month data-connected packages at the moment, which is basically driving the quality of service to improve, to make sure that I'm going to stay on this service because I enjoy the quality I'm getting, and then price. So if it's affordable and I'm getting good service, I will stay on your month-to-month network.
Yeah.
Now, if that's the case, how the problems that Telkom started way back when, and some of the MNOs have started by hiking up prices in Africa or South Africa specifically, surely that's going to start to taper off because of the mass having a voice. And what does that do to IoT? Because that'll scale it.
I'm not sure if it'll drive the price down. I mean, there's certainly a degree of agreement between these mobile operators. I'm not saying if they actually do, but there's no incentive for them to reduce the price if they're getting away with it.
Well, that's fine when supply was lower than demand. But now, every second person in the room is a ISP or a data provider.
So I was reading an interesting use case of a large MNO in India who's giving away their voice packages now for free. So you can call anyone.
Because voice is nothing.
Voice is nothing. It's their data packages where they're making their money. And it's throwing the rest of the market into turmoil. They don't know what to do. They aren't able to adapt and pivot to say, how do we address this? And they're just losing market share hand over fist.
So a while back, we had the guys from Squidnet join us on the show. So there's a couple of podcasts back, we had the guys from Squidnet. And they're creating an infrastructure or a network purely for connected sensors that are per sensor price, per read, so making it really, really affordable for the small bytes of information that these... So let's get more into IoT sensors.
Internet of Things as a Service.
Yes. Yes.
Ooh, rolls nice. Off there the tongue.
It really does. Another acronym said. That we can get. But, yeah, so they're trying to create it as such a way that you can scale almost immediately. Mm. And one of the case studies that came up there was the sensors on farm gates to determine how often they were open, whether or not they were open, if they weren't open. So basically security. But they were doing – I mean, they were doing it in rudimentary fashion, but that was what they were doing out in the sticks, literally. This very low latent network that had far reaches and was able to work.
That's very cool. I think if you look at a lot of African agricultural land, it's either poorly fenced or poorly maintained. So you have interconnecting farms where the farm gate is just swinging freely, and you can have an alert on that. Then that's something that can add real value to that small scale farmer. His cattle are no longer wandering off onto his neighbor's farm
at the right
or onto the motorway.
Yeah.
One of my favorite Internet of Things examples was the there's a device that connects to a cow's tail, and it picks up which way the tail is wagging dependent on how close it is to giving birth.
You're kidding.
So it sends an alert through to the farmer to say your cow is starting to calve and you need to be there. And it's saving, like, apparently tens of thousands of calves and cows' lives across Europe where this thing's being used.
Yes, that's good for McDonald's.
It is good for McDonald's, which is good for you.
If they started using real beef, then that would be great.
Actually, that's a good point.
So, I mean, we're starting to kind of step out of the world of wireless. And
I don't know where we are. What world are we in now?
But I'm quite interested to figure out the challenges around... Okay, so we've got a photo of this cow.
It's called a moo call.
It's called a moo call.
It's got a YouTube video on how to fit this thing.
I'm sorry, but it looks like a suppository.
Yeah, it does. Are you sure it's in it or so this on is, it?
Yeah.
Important. So we can see this picture. Over-tighten.
Do not over-tighten.
Poor cow.
That's example. Hilarious. Okay, we'll tweet that because I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, so everybody knows what we're talking about.
So I'm guessing that particular device, the challenge of power is solved through...
Kinetic motion,
right?
That's probably just a battery.
Or maybe it's just a battery. Damn it. But let's explore that, because surely that's a limitation on getting this mass amount of devices out there.
You could put a solar panel on its back and a crash helmet on its head and see if it survives the trip.
Right?
I think what's lacking in a lot of the adoption of technology is the Moore's law for batteries. Why, you know, where's that?
Yeah.
We haven't had any sort of real advancement in battery technology in years. It hasn't kept up with to how much power these devices actually need and use.
Yeah.
I think Musk is solving the scale element of it, right? The mass production.
It's sort of inversely proportionate between the green efficiency of consumption of power versus the capacity that batteries can have and the life that batteries can last. I mean, we're going to meet in this perfect sweet spot in the next couple of years. And then probably we won't need batteries, hopefully, at all.
Well, I think there's the it was released this week or last week, the first cell phone that doesn't need a battery.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah. That was brilliant. Hey?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I spent a bit of time...
It wasn't fancy. Well, it can make a phone call, which is good for the MNOs to start getting their voice calls back in.
It would be good in emergency situations, emergency services. You always have your connected... or you are connectable at any point, any time, and you just throw it in a drawer in the glove box of the car, what have you.
Well, we're almost halfway into the show, and if you have joined us, we have Mr. Jamie Whittaker joining us in the show, and we're talking about the future of IoT, Internet of Things. And if you want to follow us...
You go to at Futurology Show, because Brett's given up saying the word at.
I don't think I completely understand Twitter at this point.
No, definitely not. Definitely
but, I mean, there have been some interesting things on Twitter, right? They've connected various devices through a Twitter feed, and you can start monitoring on Twitter. That's a great example of social and Internet of Things.
That was one of the earlier disruptive things that I had a privilege of working on, which is the using Twitter or a tweet as a currency in a vending machine.
Yes.
Right. And I think we actually did it at the Discovery offices with the duathlon, and we put the vending machine into the reception, and you could tweet the at handle and the hashtag that was the right combination, and it would actually dispense in that moment.
But you've grown up now. You do that with beer instead.
Yeah, no, beer was a lot better focus for my attention.
I like what you're doing with the sensors, right? Because you're taking sensor and combining it with revenue, with your flow meters.
The flow meters, yes. Yeah. So the beer flow meters, we've released a product called Beverage Insights.
Very cool.
Which basically takes real-time beer consumption or beverage consumption through taps, and we're able to monitor temperature, pressure, and volume. That goes through these lines, which basically aids in managing waste due to spillage or theft also helps bar owners and restaurants to actually make sure that they optimize their sales, because quite often if it starts pumping out foam, this beer, and with all the craft beer going up, we've got different types of beers that all need different pressures and all need different temperatures. They're often not sure whether it's foaming because it's empty or it's foaming because maybe it's not cold enough or the pressure's too high. So now they're able to extract maximum amounts of beer out of this because they know exactly what volume they're at, which is quite cool.
You could also link that into the brewer so that they get notification on when the keg's running a bit low and you're starting to impact on the distribution network.
Yeah, so that's what Jamie said earlier. I mean, we started pulling all this information. We quickly realized that interpreting it was actually quite valuable both for the restaurant owners and the bar owners, but also for the breweries. So they could start doing just-in-time orders because they know how much beer is left in a keg.
Yeah.
And they'd also be able to know to place the order or to at least follow up with a bar or someone and say, hey,
And we've got that problem tonight, right? So you've overpressured your keg, and we're now having to drink
bottled beer
out of the bottles. Yes.
Bottled beer, which I mean, again, that's quite nice. We're drinking Castle Light, and it's telling me that the it's not so cold anymore.
It was cold.
Mine's
but
not
it's
cold.
Not cold.
And yours is also. It's not cold anymore.
But the second idea on the sensor there. So the first idea being, you know, get alert when it's cold enough. Another one, you get an alert when it's finished.
Ooh.
Don't you just stick it on your head?
Yes.
I think,
good
I
point.
Think with your sensors as well. So you have your beer taps and you're measuring the flow, etc. It would be great if you had the sensors on the glasses that the consumers
wait,
are using.
So there was a company. There is a company in Europe that actually have created the smart glass, and it is a legitimately Dinkum connected glass, where you're able to, using NFC, be able to tag yourself as the owner of that glass. I know exactly, you'll say, I'm going to order a Guinness, and they'll pour me my first Guinness in my glass. And when it, so using photometrics and all the other stuff at the bottom of this NFC, which is really clever, it's able to say, well, there's more light now than there was before.
Oh,
it must be empty.
or half empty, because, I mean, the amount of light that would pass through the drink would increase as it gets lower.
Depends on your outlook, I suppose.
Yeah.
It also depends how quickly you drink. But I'm not too sure that your idea is good for marriages, though.
Why?
No, I don't think your wife will appreciate the ping on her cell phone every time you finish it.
It depends whose cell phone is linked to.
Hopefully you can manage
it's
notifications.
It's like my credit card pings.
Yes, exactly. That's a great IoT device.
Exactly. There's an example of IoT.
And again, we spoke a little bit earlier about whether we are limited by our infrastructure in South Africa and Africa. And those pinging cell phones that you get from your – those SMSs you get from your bank, that is far beyond what the guys in the U.S. have right now. Mm. I mean, the first time we visited the U.S. was, 5 years ago, and I was in a store, swiped my card and got a ping. I was like, it's just come off. And the person in the store's jaw hit the floor.
Gobsmack.
She had no – what do you mean it's just come off? No, it's got a message from my bank. What do you mean you just got a message from your bank?
Yeah.
No idea how that could actually work. It just wasn't a service. And for us, it's become ubiquitous.
Yeah. So don't play first world victim in a third world country, because we've actually got it made with a lot of the tech that we're using.
We definitely
today.
Do.
Yeah,
that's
so true. Yeah. So if we just had to look at the future of the IoT things, because this is not a complicated subject. It's really a couple of critical elements. It's sensors, it's data, the integration of all of these elements, and the processing power to understand the underlying challenge. Which
isn't much, actually.
It isn't
there's
much.
A lot of data, right?
There's a huge amount of data.
Yeah. So data is actually the critical thing. I mean, I was reading an idea of turning energy management linked to a blockchain using IoT.
Oh, we get blockchain back into it.
Exactly.
You just made my day.
And artificial intelligence, because now we've got predictive modeling.
Thanks for summing it up, Mike, because I think we kind of got lost. And I think one of the great things with IoT is that it is limitless in its use.
Absolutely.
It really is a whole new internet. We speak about how blockchain is a whole new rebuild of the internet. IoT is that, again, in a very different direction.
Yeah, totally.
I think it's the convergence. IoT moves towards, and the benefits of it move towards the convergence between people and things. And then once you've got that together with AI and blockchain technologies, etc., you can really start providing in context real time value to people and wherever they are.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
Where does it all start and end? So it's the connected thing, the IoT. Now we've got machine learning and automation and AI, and we've got blockchain as an underlying regulator between all of these things if we wanted to.
Yeah.
I hope at some point it comes back to the human. And where?
So that for me, that's always the sort of the end point, right? It's why are we doing any of these things? Why are we progressing any of these technologies? It's to address a human need. To remove frustration out of someone's life somewhere. And if we always consider that at the end of the day, our user is a person. Yeah. And if that user is going to use our product or our service, it's going to be for a reason, and that reason is typically going to be it's easier for me to do it this way, or it's removing some complexity from my life.
Unless it's machine to machine, of course. So
but at the end of the day, for what? For what purpose?
What's the point?
To solve
until we get to the singularity.
Correct.
Right. Then it's going to be the end of the day for the purpose of solving someone's problem somewhere. Yeah.
I have this very dystopian philosophy that's happening at the moment.
Elon.
Hey?
You and Elon.
Yeah, no, we try. No, but it's pretty much on those lines. I mean, it's about regulation of AI is what he's bringing up.
Absolutely.
So I've got this, the title is the discrete web. okay, and I'm sure there's been used many, many times, but with the rise of IoT and machine learning and AI, there is no need actually for these machine-to-machine discussions to ever actually manifest in any sort of human conversation.
Well,
and
already,
how much of that is happening
until
we know?
They've already started talking to each other in their language,
own language
that they've defined that we can't
correct.
Understand. So, I mean, that's... To the uneducated.
So the show's over.
Terrifying.
So the show is over. Like, literally, what's the point?
Yeah.
At that point, like, that's why I say it's dystopian, because there could be a complete underlying digital coup being run by machines that instill a blockchain into policies within in government,
into our banking.
But this is the thing. And now we've got a car system that is going to be run completely on AI that constantly learns with hyperloops that can get us there faster. Imagine we all take a Hyperloop one day and just never come out the other side.
Because we've gone to a manufacturing plant like a cow
mints.
To provide them with
power.
Exactly. We are the new battery.
We should make a movie out of this.
That's why batteries.
We all of a sudden need a theme tune.
But batteries haven't evolved for that reason, right? We are the perfect battery.
Oh, dear. I'm not too sure where the show's going. The internet of Brett.
Well, I just thought it was an interesting thought.
No, but you know what?
It's I think you've got it wrong there, Mike. He's a brettery.
A salt and brettery.
But I think you make a really good point, brettery.
Which one?
Brettery. Both brettery. The idea of the ethical element and where we're actually going as a society, and how we actually live our lives. And what kind of systems come out of this? Because I don't think the future is very clear.
Mm.
You know, there's so many angles moving at warp speed. And it's not like sitting in 1940 when we knew in 10 years' time what was going to happen. You know, it's not as simple as that anymore.
Did they then? I mean,
the pace of change
has picked up. Pace of change has picked up. That's undoubtable. But I think that there was still a lot of unknowns. 10 years ago, we didn't know where we were going. 100 years ago, they didn't know what was going to be coming next. And I think it's our ability to adapt to those changes.
I think that's a critical
thing. Which
is
the differentiator. And that's why.
That is. Yeah, I quite agree. I quite agree. But do you have any thoughts around, these are big issues. And do you see any of our politicians thinking about this, Jamie? Brettery?
I have to admit, I think Donald Trump's probably thinking about it, right? He's put together his IoT forum. I just wanted to see if everyone believed me or not.
What? He wants to know if the speed of Orange will get him to the Mars or not.
Yes.
Come on.
I think the only thing that Trump knows about technology is what to fit into 140 characters.
Yeah, exactly. I think so.
And then sometimes not, right?
No, exactly.
I want to go back to you. We were talking about, back in the original industrial age, did they know about the things that they could use to improve things? I mean, Lord Kelvin has a quote that says, if you could, it's not on this website, sorry, Jamie, he's trying to check out my list of quotes, but it's...
It's actually a porn site.
No, yeah. Lord Kelvin had a quote, whereas if you could measure something and reduce it to a number, you'd be able to understand it, and by understanding it, be able to improve it. Which is pretty much what IoT is about. By understanding and interpreting the analytical big data that comes from these connected sensors, we're able to exponentially almost start strategizing how to optimize it.
Or evolve, right? As humans, knowing our environment to that extent and getting that much data, we can start learning the impact of the environment on our own evolution, right?
One of the more recent quotes, though, is that there's this... whether it's a quote or it's just a discussion that's happening, where AI is the last invention of the human race.
Mm-hmm.
And if AI is the central nervous system or the brain, then is IoT not the appendages
and
the body? And then eventually we end up in this world that is literally one connected being.
Well, certainly the connected vehicle, you could apply that. Autonomous vehicles would definitely be there. Could definitely be there. The appendages.
Oh, imagine the appendages.
Vessels. Everything else is the ears and the eyes, maybe.
And
the non-movable.
But right, your eyes could be somewhere. Your limb, you could have four different limbs doing different things, and your ears are all over the place, right? You can split it all up.
We have a paradoxical event about to happen where we talk about religion and this idea of a higher being and an omnipresent God.
Is it called Intel?
No, it's faith-based spiritual existence.
I thought we were talking about processing chips.
No, but that's exactly it. On the flip side of it, with all the tech and all the internet of things and the connected AI and machine learning, there are processors on my phone. There's a processor on my computer. There's a camera on my phone. There's two cameras on my phone.
Three. Have you got a Plus?
I don't have a Plus. I'm sorry. I'm not quite as fancy. Sorry. But that's the thing. I mean, there's all these latent passive processes and sensors not really being used, but are they? And if they were, we literally start to have one, if a singularity or some sort of cognitive recognition or understanding of self-awareness starts happening, you have an omnipresent being brought about by our own infrastructure.
I think that brings like another another point that we need to make people more aware of now that there is this ubiquitousness of connected devices. Is what people are signing up for. You've purchased your phone and now you've downloaded a bunch of stuff and you've hit yes on all the EULAs, and now what have you actually agreed to with all of those? What can be tracked or monitored or listened to from your device?
Presents it all, right?
As an example,
yeah, I want it all.
There was an example this week where people were signing the EULA in a restaurant to get onto their Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And in the terms and conditions is that they agreed to clean the toilet.
Yeah, I saw that.
And they caught 1,000 people or something.
And 1,000 hours of community service as well.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And they all said yes. 10,000 people, I think it was. Mm.
Yep.
So I have to admit, I think this new kind of terrorism poses as a problem. And I'm going to go really kind of theoretical, kind of weirdness, philosophical maybe. And I used to do a lot of work in the telco space. And a big competitor of ours were the Chinese manufacturers when it came to networks. To the point it was that they would give the networking infrastructure away for free. So we used to sit there and used to laugh about it. What happens if there's this big red button that's just been punched into the code? And that's how you get your world domination, right?
Yeah.
It's now about controlling the infrastructure, the IoT, the sensors, and all the data and the human rights.
That's one of the key risks, I think. Well, the most serious risks around IoT is the security aspect. So the Department of Justice, the FBI, they can all be hacked. You think that some manufacturer of an IoT device in China has thought through the entire security protocol of this connected device that he's putting together? The answer to that is no. It can be hacked, will be hacked. They are being hacked.
Is that why it's possibly a good idea to have big data in the cloud and all the interpreted data on the ground?
You mean the value that's being gained from the big data differentiation of
that might be a great idea.
Just a thought. I mean, as a strategy for best practice could be.
Well, surely you can still get that data if you've hacked it and you put a Trojan in it.
But you'd have to interpret it. Now, let's say it's really big data, like big data, a million times a million lines of
SKA.
Things. Huge, yes.
Yeah, it's a square kilometer, right?
Oh, yes.
I mean, those guys have massive amount of data. They keep compressing, to your point, I think. So extracting value at different sizes, I guess.
Yeah, but there's that much data. And all of that data, in one instance, needs to be interpreted. But don't interpret it in the space that is the most vulnerable, I suppose.
I think you're going to get to a point where your ground-based resources are just not going to be able to keep up. I think really what we want to talk about is how do you use blockchain in these instances.
Yes, the distributed ledger.
How do you take, for every connected device that is feeding X petabytes, I mean, SCAR is feeding petabytes of data up into the cloud or into its local centers on an hourly basis.
Hourly, yes.
How do you take that and wrap that, or communicate that, or use blockchain to communicate that across different areas? And I think, you guys are familiar with the Myra botnet.
No.
So you know when Twitter and Amazon went down on the East Coast of America in October last year, that was this thing called the Myra botnet, which was some guy wrote a bit of nefarious code and published it, so anyone could use it, and it ended up taking down, as I said, Amazon and Twitter.
Sure.
But there were, I think, within 30 days, 500,000 connected devices infected. And a majority of those devices were security cameras, video cameras, that had not had their admin default password changed from password. And the manufacturers of those devices had not thought the security through, or how secure these things should be. So they didn't provide an interface to those users to then go and reset, factory reset, and then change their passwords. So they had to throw them away.
Wow.
500,000 devices, just throw them away.
It's a global scale, proverbial, all our eggs in one basket in a digital mindset, basically. I mean,
is that a year 2000 blip, right, from our IoT point of view?
No, it's a lousy manufacturer's blip. The people they're wanting to push out a solution that they can make money off now. They don't want to think it through and add the extra complexity of building the security and the admin interfaces into it.
Isn't it just really learning what this is about, though? Because, I mean, that's an easy mistake if we don't actually understand. If we look at the Internet of Things, I mean, I get your point. I mean, this fast-scale production with, you know, to get the stuff out as quickly as possible. But the learnings that need to come out of the Internet of Things and how we actually use it, and I think that's why blockchain is such an important part of this, because it's distributed, which means we live in a distributed framework and there's no centralized
power.
Yeah, but it's also like, you know, it's like the currencies at the moment. It's a great example of centralization where you can manipulate currencies by a few central players very, very quickly and easily. And it's the same kind of scenario that we're talking about here. And it is. It's that immutability of it.
So I have a comment on the chain or influencing.
Yeah. come on.
So, I mean, everyone loves Bitcoin and Ether and what have you. But you saw that tweet. You see that tweet the other day about the creator of Ethereum. It was tweeted that he had died in a car crash, and it lost 30% of value in 24 hours.
Yeah,
and it wasn't true.
It's completely based on sentiment.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a whole lot of that.
Well, there are two sides to it, because there's the store of wealth, and it's the ability to transact and actually do this functional one-to-one transactional exchange of value.
Mm. Basically, a whole bunch of people that knew how to make a immutable, and I'm using the parentheses, technology that weren't part of the Illuminati decided that they could get a leg in or a foot in and create something that would get them to the top.
You say they weren't a part of the Illuminati.
Yeah, true story. Okay, that's a whole other discussion for a whole other day. But
surely that's an example of maturity. It hasn't got enough scale to be able to counteract the market forces.
Yeah, with Bitcoin and Ether and things like that, and same with IoT, the security on IoT devices, there's a lack of a regulatory body. And the regulatory body is in direct conflict with what a lot of these companies stand for.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're doing it because they don't want to be bound by regulatory bodies, but now it's creating proper negativity in that space.
I actually did a post based on Elon Musk's comment that we needed to get the regulations in place around AI and stuff like that. I must admit, the comments that I got against the post were very much, are you kidding me? Government and regulation is going to slow everything down. We must just get rid of all of that. And I must admit, like, I probably would have been that naive maybe 5 years ago. But as we enter this new realm, I think a hybrid version of regulation, regulation needs to get agile, right? It needs to become faster and pick up with the times. But I still believe we need some guidance.
People are not self-regulating.
Yeah,
people are not self-regulating. Not at all. And they are fundamentally sort of they're driving to sort of prosper. That's what they are. And I think without a regulatory body or without self-regulation, it's going to end up bad.
Even self-regulation, right? It needs some form of guidance.
To quote Jurassic Park, and not the latest one, the first one.
Sure. I know what you're going to say.
Yeah. We spent so much time trying to figure out whether or not we could. We didn't stop to think whether or not we should.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And, I mean, they built dinosaurs that ate them ultimately, so it wasn't a very good end for those creators. But I don't think the end is very different. We might be eaten or consumed by some other thing. Mm. But I think it's a very valid point to the speed at which things are developed.
Yeah.
That some sort of care, I mean, okay, just to quote Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. And if we're going to go and just wield all this power and just throw it all over the place, it's just going to make a mess.
You need a third movie quote. You can't leave it at two.
Star Wars, got to be something there.
Jerry Maguire, you had met hello. It doesn't always need to make sense. That's another thing.
Show me the money.
No, but that's again, the problem. So let's say it all goes swimmingly well. Let's stop the things. Let's say it's not circling down the drain and it's going to be okay. But then we place so much trust. Okay, now I'm going to make it not okay. But we place so much trust in this thing that has gotten us decades now into the future. And we are, wonderful Internet of Things and AI and all this stuff. And we never needed to regulate it. Elon Musk, you were wrong, and then we turn into batteries.
Yeah.
Well, at least Elon Musk will make money.
Yeah, according to Elon Musk,
he'll probably be dead by then.
We already are likely batteries, and we just don't know it yet. So it actually happened 10 years back. So I think what you're saying is,
does your meat taste nice to you, or is it the Matrix telling you it tastes nice?
Exactly. red pill, blue pill. I think that's like the risk, right? So it becomes so norm that we don't realize that we are. I'm going completely off on this tangent here. Forget it.
Absurd becomes the normal.
Yeah, and you don't realize that you've been, you know, you've been replaced.
Yeah.
But that's the discrete web.
Is the future of Internet of Things going into the world of cyborg and a new species?
Yeah, sapiens.
Well, that's what Elon Musk reckons is going to be the defense to AI, right? Is self-enhancement.
The neural link, yeah.
Because you look at the world of medicine, mm-hmm. for instance, mm-hmm. and it's really exciting. And I know we've touched on this with
the nanobots,
ingestible.
Ingestibles.
Yeah. Ingestibles. That'll make quite a good movie, right? Remember the movie, was it Skin Deep, where we had to go in, I think it was Skin Deep.
That was some back in the 80s. Movie you were watching.
No, moving on.
Rick and Morty has got a great episode on that.
Where I'm going with it is that I think it's part of this evolutionary kind of process. So tying back together the regulatory side of things, slowing down is a good thing for us. As much as we're putting pressure on the market forces to go faster, as we started this show, thinking about the price of data. So if we can't control it through a regulatory force, the question lies, do we let the price of data constrain our industrial revolution?
Hell no. Hashtag data must fall.
No. Data must fall.
Brett sucks.
Thanks. Yes, it was a double blow. Two breaths with one blow. Smash. Okay, damn. Cool. Your mic's off. So we've got roughly 10 minutes left in the show, getting to the skinny end, and we could probably like warm and fuzzy this up a little bit. Let's not look so far into the future. Let's do the ante what we normally do. Let's bring it back to like the next – what's going to happen the next 5 years? And let's think about consumers when we talk about this next bit, because IoT – I mean the housewives among us or connected to us somewhere. I was looking at Mike when I
said
that.
Mike, I also thought
you sound no, but like so
most I'd like a sandwich, please.
So we all crave for this connected house
your beer app on my phone.
With our smart fridge and a geolocator in our phone that tells our bath that when we're a certain distance away from home with an arrival time, that have a bath of 36 degrees ready poured with some bubble. You know, that this easy life. Brought about by amazing IoT and automation.
You're thinking the Jetsons, right?
Yes.
Oh, no, I'm thinking Black Mirror.
That's amazing.
Hey, if you really want an insight, you watch that.
Let's get more fuzzy about the things that are achievable now and into the close future using IoT.
I don't know that some of the concepts in Black Mirror aren't that far into the future. It's quite scary already.
They're now.
That show freaks me out.
Seriously. Yeah, me too.
It really freaks me out.
Yeah. I stopped cycling on my
So let's not talk about that. Let's talk about Black Mirror.
Before we get to what is the next step of that fully connected, you know, Jetson suburbia, right?
Yeah.
There's a fundamental hurdle that we need to get over first, and that's the fact that we've run out of IP addresses. So I think as long as
have we really
IPv6?
Done
IPv6 is the next stage, right? Oh, okay, that isn't sort of universally accepted or used, right? And there's the interoperability between IP and IPv6 that we have to consider. I think until we get to that point, then we are constrained not by the cost and speed of connectivity, but how many devices we can actually connect.
Does Apple not sort that out? Because I thought they now stopped letting any apps that run anything less than IPv6
could be
on their stores. I mean, they could be the driver of the adoption.
Yeah.
Do IoT devices need to have a full IP address? Don't they just emit?
They all do.
They all need an IP address. Yeah. Every single last little
70 piece billion of devices, dude.
I believe so. Most. So IPv6, you know, does that. So, you know, with IPv6, it opens up, 340 trillion new numbers.
Yeah.
Well, that's right.
Well, unless you've got nanobots, right? And then we're still stuck with
another. So that wasn't really a very good point, though, because we fixed it.
Well, we haven't fixed interoperability between the existing Internet of Things and the new next Internet of Things. So.
Wow. And I think that's a world that we live in at the moment, that struggle with managing our legacy systems, trying to keep up with this new wave of stuff. Because I don't think it's all going to be driven by new startups coming into the space. It's got to plug in to existing – I mean, take our telco network that's running, what, SS7 still exists in our telco networks? Just lay it up. So, I mean, there are those kind of challenges.
But to the point, your question, Brett, of what is that Jetson's future 10 years from now?
Or 10 weeks from now.
Whenever it is, it's going to come down to where are the problems that users are experiencing? What are the frustrations that they currently have, and how can technology take those away from them? How can they make getting from point A to point B smoother and easier? And if we can identify those, then incrementally we will get to that Jetson's future. It's not going to be, I'm on my way home, so I have, my robot housekeeper run my bath, or have the bath run itself, etc. It's going to be, I'm on my way home, is my house secure? Is it safe for me to enter?
Yeah.
So it's going to move up and remove some of the problems incrementally until we get to a point where, okay, I know everything's secure, I know the house is locked, the lights are all on, okay, run my bath.
Actually, you got a good point. It's not going to be robots, right? No. The Internet Things is one big robot.
Sure.
It is. But I just think there's a counterbalance to this because, I mean, on my phone now, I've taken off all my social media, and I'm deliberately disconnecting from technology because I find it's dominating.
Great. I haven't heard from in like 2 weeks.
Is that why you don't tweet the shows out anymore? No, why are you on the show?
Yeah. No, but you know what it is?
He's tried the other future.
I've tried the other future.
Is there a vacancy?
It's fantastic. The problem is you're always on, and you actually need to turn off as well. And I think this is the counterbalance to this IoT.
I think that's your next T-shirt. If you can keep your T-shirts on long enough, we'll get you one of those.
Oh, that'll be fantastic.
You don't always have to be on.
Turned on.
Hashtag what Mike said.
Yeah, but I think it will.
The shirt all wives will love.
Yeah. Moving swiftly on. What do you think, Brett?
Well, I think that shirt would be a great idea.
We adopted that squirrel hard.
Yeah, you did. Squeeze that squirrel.
So I do think we've come to the very end, not even the skinny end. I think we're at the tail end of this episode. It's been jam-packed with a lot of stuff. But I think, Mike Cowan, I think you need to sum it up. I think we've all spoken enough.
Yeah. You have. I'm not too sure what this conversation's been about, though. But
see, the problem is it's outside of Mike's world of blockchain. I mean, he's going, if I can't apply a blockchain to this or a universal basic income, why do it?
I think it's quite a simple conversation. It's really how do we connect things to make our lives better? And I think there's some incredible examples.
What is the social impact?
What is the social impact? And that's really what it comes down to, which is my point, is, some of us are going to be disconnecting from things because, just because I can't have my bath run doesn't mean I want to have my bath run. And that's what the world will become.
Well, we were having a conversation earlier this week, and we were talking about what drives the most sustainable good?
Yes.
And I think if something starts to drive the most sustainable good, we don't need to worry about things like regulation because we're actually hedonistically pursuing the most sustainable good.
Yeah, the challenge of that is really the underlying system. And we have greed and this capitalism is created that greed. But if we had a different system of community, we would have a very different emotion that's driving the world. And that defines what the Internet of Things will become.
Yeah.
It really does.
Mass adoption and which direction
exactly
that community of people
takes. And how does it shift how we live and how we govern ourselves?
Jamie Whittaker, final thoughts from you. What are you looking forward to in the future, 5 to 10?
So I have definitely not disconnected. I think I probably connected more things in the last 6 weeks than disconnected. I enjoy technology and I enjoy what it frees up and what it gives and what makes available to me on a daily basis. I think that the more connected devices I have in my life, the better. But they have their place, right?
So they do.
There's loads of studies that say you shouldn't have your phone and devices plugged in the bedroom, and that's fine. I don't. They're plugged in there just because that's where the chargers are. But I read a book, a paper book.
Yeah.
Do you keep your phone far away from your bedside table?
I don't because it's my alarm and I need to turn it off.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I have to get out of bed and turn it off and snooze
it. It's kind of won then, hasn't it? It's done its job.
I do need to wake up though. So,
yeah, yeah.
So I like that, and I also I feel that I personally am fundamentally a good person and have the right sort of people's interests at heart. And in that sense, I kind of follow Eric Schmidt's train of thought when they were talking about facial recognition that Google released years and years ago. It's like, if you don't have anything to hide, what are you worried about? I don't have anything to hide. I don't have anything that I'm not doing that I wouldn't want my wife, my mom, or anybody else to know about.
Yeah.
And if the technology out in the wild can then make my life better, then I want it.
The digital wild.
The digital wild.
Sure. There
that.
We go.
We start that as a company.
Hashtag.
Hashtag here. That's digital a good hashtag. Wild. Digital wild.
Yeah, I think it's phenomenal. What I've definitely decided out of this session is Jamie stays on my man wall.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. I'm thinking of shaving those.
Oh, whoa. No, no. Whoa. Now nah, you've gone too far.
Kill this. Kill this.
Getting a little bit gray in the beard there.
Well, this has been another episode of the Futurology Show, and in the future we probably all will have a little bit of grey in there somewhere, and if we can all just do it with the most fun possible, then I think that's cool. He who dies with the most connected things wins. Until next week,
cheerio. Adios.
Bye.
This is CliffCentral.com.